Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished doctor, Dr. Sameer Parikh from Gurgaon, New India, to the show. Dr. Parikh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Parikh is the Director, Department of Mental Health and Behavioral Sciences, Fortis National Mental Health Program. He's an MBBS and MD in psychiatry from Ahmedabad and topped both DPM and MD. So Dr. Parikh, let's talk about mental health and behavioral sciences. What are some of the mental health challenges we face in our country?
I think let's look at two aspects here. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a very interesting data that recently came out. High-income countries have a ratio of mental health experts, psychiatrists, mental health experts, 70 to 1 lakh. Mm-hmm. Low-income countries have as low as 1 to 2 per lakh.
Wow.
So one of our biggest challenges is that we have dearth of experts. Mm-hmm. What that does is you have lack of accessibility. Mm-hmm. What that creates, more misinformation, mm-hmm. more quacks, so as to say, and more stigma. Okay. So in India, what happens is that you will still have, even though it's changed over the few years, a lot of people hesitant to speak to any mental health practitioner because they would still experience the stigma. I think that's our challenge. So outreach, accessibility, stigma, number of experts.
Very interesting. So, you know, you commented that the poorer countries or the lesser developed countries have just 1 or 2 per lakh. Is this because of lack of trained mental health specialists, or is it because, if I can use a commercial term, the market is smaller?
No, it's not the market. The market, in fact, is very big, if at all we would use that word. But let me give you an example to that. 5% of the world's population has depression. It's amongst the single largest illnesses in the world as per WHO.
Incredible.
Right. So when you just, this is just one illness. Mm-hmm. 10% of the global health burden of all illnesses is psychiatry, neurology, substance abuse. And this becomes 30% in the non-fatal illness group. Mm. So when you look at the landscape of need worldwide, it's immense, it's vast, it's beyond us. But the thing is, we've had lesser experts because it also takes about how many seats are there, how many people come out of colleges every year, so on and so forth. Then how many people leave and go to other countries and practice in other countries. Some of those challenges also have been there for developing countries because, like I said, it's a stigma component, the outreach component, economic component, which may at times take people from low-income countries to high-income countries, people who are experts in the field.
Fascinating. So, Dr. Parikh, you just mentioned that about 5% of the world's population could have depression-related challenges. For our viewers and listeners, tell me what kind of symptoms should one be looking for, either in oneself or in one's family members or children, to understand that they need some help?
So let's try and understand this. Even before I come to symptoms, I think the first thing we need to appreciate is to accept mental illness as an illness. It's a disorder. It's not in your or my control.
Okay.
So for example, I have thyroid. Mm-hmm. I don't have thyroid because it's my fault. And I don't have thyroid because there's some problem in my family or my background.
Correct.
I have thyroid because my body doesn't secrete enough thyroxine. So if I had, let's say, depression, it's because my body is not secreting enough serotonin, as an example. Now, that first we need to understand. So how do you also look at diagnosis or, more importantly, identification? One criteria everybody needs to understand. When you have symptoms which cause impairment in your functionality, in a consistent pattern, that's something that needs to be looked into. Impairment of functioning could be academic work, it could be personal, It could be social. That's the impairment. Now, how can it happen? Thoughts, behavior, moods, your overall day-to-day living, your productivity, which could range from work to academics, the way you look at yourself and others, your relationships. So if you start having consistent problems here, then, and it's impairing your life, then yes, you need to look for a, consider talking to someone. And here we can look at depression as an example, sadness of mood, loss of interest, loss of pleasure, sleep appetite changes, concentration issues, fatigue, not enjoying life the way you used to, sometimes feeling life may not be worth it, hopeless, helpless, worthless thoughts. And this group of symptoms, some of them continuing for about 2 weeks, causing impairment in your social, occupational, personal functioning, could be depression. What do you do? My suggestion has always been go to your family physician. Family physician step one, especially in countries like ours. You don't need to go to a specialist always. Over-expertization is not a solution for us. Okay. Go to the family physician. Family physician will tell you, hey, bring some of these changes, you'll be okay. Or give you some guidance, or probably give you a medication. Or say, oh, I think you should go and meet this psychiatrist or that psychologist. And then I'll also follow up. And we need to then look at both burden of care, resources, affordability, all of that looks after. And I fundamentally believe that the first gatekeeper needs to be the family physician as a solution to mental health in our country.
Amazing, amazing. So why is it that in our country, even today, despite so much knowledge and despite so many high profile people coming and talking about depression and other such challenges, why is it still such a private affair and people talk about in such hushed tones? When I'm happy to say I'm diabetic or I've got a heart problem or, as you say, a thyroid problem, why is depression something that is not spoken about too much?
A couple of things. I think one, we also need to accept that stigma is something that affects worldwide. Numbers may vary, but stigma is something almost 75% of people suffering from mental illnesses worldwide have experienced at some moment or the other. What happens in our part of the world, and this is where we need to understand. Yes, in the last few years, we've had some role models, some known figures, sports, media, politics, who've come and talked about it. And that has helped hundreds and thousands of people to see it as something that they can also have. And it's good to have people who speak about mental health. But also have enough conversation going, which may not be right. So you'll still have somebody saying, oh, it's a hype, or oh, it's only your fault, oh, it's you don't need to take a medication. Even today, in as urban as it gets, NCR, India, where I practice, even today I get enough patients and families who would tell me, will the medications cause addiction? Can we avoid medication? Wow. Can we get okay by our own selves? Because psychiatry being a young branch, relatively, you know, before 50s, there weren't medications. Gradually, medications came. Initial medications had a lot of side effects. As science evolved, in 70s, you had a lot many better medications. 90s saw some wonderful medications. Today, it's a different story. So some of these things are medicines for lifelong, not true. Are medicine sedatives, not true. Can I drive with medicines? Yes, you can. Can I go to work with meds? Yes, you can. So some of those aspects have lingered on. And over the years, portrayal in media. So earlier, if you see a lot of comedy portrayal using psychiatry, then it became violence. Then it became the psychopath, sociopath element. So that continues. So there are multiple factors here, but I feel if we increase awareness with outreach and accessibility, because if you don't get help, no matter how much awareness you get, what will you do with it? And I think that's where the COVID experience is probably going to be a completely different milestone in mental health worldwide and in our country as well. Because what it did, it brought two things. Mm-hmm. One, we realized when there is a crisis, we experience distress.
Correct.
And we started talking about distress, which opened the doors for us to talk about disorders and diseases also. But second thing, which I think is the most important thing for a country like ours, is telemedicine. Telemedicine, in any case, I've said this for the past several years, is one of the solutions for mental health in a country like ours. Because you have less number of experts, most of those experts are towards the urban areas, metros and urban areas. So to create the reach in tier three cities, in village level, district level, you will need to have something, and that solution is digital. So today, I may be sitting in NCR or any city, mm-hmm. and somebody across India just needs a smartphone, a little bit of an internet connection, and on a video call, get an opinion from a psychiatrist, get a prescription, and locally procure it. It brings costs down, it makes it affordable, it brings accessibility, outreach. And that, I think, is the solution, and which is going to be the future when it comes to mental health.
Wow, what a great response. So Dr. Parikh, coming back to you, referred to the pandemic, and that's a good segue for my next question. The pandemic has, as you said, created a lot of stress in a lot of people. But when I look at people of my age group, I'm 65, you know, one of the things that we have seen when we were in our 20s, 30s, 40s, as human beings are social animals, we were able to interact with friends at work, outside work, etc. But last 2 years has impacted the millennials and the Gen Zs and the younger people very significantly. I would love to get your perspective on how has the pandemic impacted mental health in the younger group of people.
So in the last year and a half, we've extensively worked with schools, colleges, young working adults. And I've always said this, and I'm going to say this here as well. Pre-COVID, how would a young adult come and talk to me? Mm-hmm. A young adult would come and talk to me and say, too much work, don't get me time, wish there was work from home, wish there was one less day at work, wish I had time for hobbies, wish I had time for families. Then COVID happens. The young adult is at home with family. And now the question is, hey, I need to go out. I haven't been out.
Correct.
What do I do here? I have just way too much to do. How do I deal with work from home? Then when you adjust from that, now the hybrid model happens. Once the hybrid model happens, how do I go back out again? Will I be able to do some of these things? Then the full-blown model happens. And then the concern is, then how will I handle those physical meetings? I've been doing Zoom meetings. I've got my lifestyle. I think we all need to understand. In any case, we evolve. We go through our changes. The struggle young people had was that there was a way of living. Like for everybody else. Correct. And I don't think young adults were any different. I believe the biggest impact was on school children and on senior citizens, because their life was impacted a lot more. Because right at the start of the pandemic, we realized that these were the vulnerable populations need to be safeguarded. And 2021 was without a board exam.
Correct.
And one can imagine that. So for children to shift to online classes, increased digital interface, lack of sports, physical activity, young adults accustomed to meeting people, going out, having a way of life. And what also happened, which we must understand, is the economic impact of the pandemic. And we have to appreciate that that has put a very different kind of a pressure. Because a lot of young people also would have a certain way of living, a bit of EMIs going here and there, a bit of a style of living. And a lot of that got impacted with jobs and pay cuts. And then the kind of loss we've experienced in terms of lives and bereavement. So some of these impacts have happened across age groups, across strata, but young adults have had to take care of more, taking care of younger people at home, taking care of senior citizens at home, taking care of home per se, ensuring work continues, going through some of these pressures, sudden change of lifestyle, that's been the pressure on young people.
Amazing. So now let me shift focus and come to the older people. My mother was, went into dementia till she passed away. And so I observed her very closely. And I was talking to some other doctors who were looking after her. And I was asking them, why is it that the incidence of mental health seem to be increasing over the years? Is it because we don't have enough data? Or is something changing in lifestyles or in the way we live, which is increasing the incidence? I'd love to get your perspective.
I'm not sure if we are in a position to say that, let's say, in the last 5 years or so, a very significant number increase would have happened. I mean, even as a psychiatry college student, a resident doctor, over 2 decades back, some of these data were very similar. I don't think that's been the case per se.
Okay.
What has changed is that we become a lot more aware.
Okay.
Internet conversations have made us a lot more aware. And like I said, in urban, tier one cities, accessibility to doctors and support systems have become better when it comes to medical support systems. So some of those aspects have brought this more into our knowledge. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have to understand that to look at mental illness, the treatment especially, mm-hmm. you'll have to look at 3 components. Biological, which is not in our control, mm-hmm. where you have medications. Psychological, correct. Which is about who I am, how I have an interface with life, which is where guidance and counseling work, where I need to work upon myself. Mm-hmm. This is where preventive techniques may actually help. Mm. Life skills for schools, psychological first aid and support system, mental health outcomes for the corporate sector, life skills for senior citizens. Some of these aspects can actually make an impact. In fact, mental health curriculum needs to be integrated in schools, something I've been saying for a while. And then comes the 3rd component, which is the pillar essentially of our existence, which is our social support system. And again, taking a COVID example, if you look at COVID, and if you look at 2 absolutely similar examples, keeping all constants same, all variables same, you'll realize that people and families where support systems were stronger had better outcomes post-COVID. And this applies to mental health as well. So our connectedness, our family, meaningful relationships and not followers on social media, meeting over video over audio over text over emoticons. That's what we need to understand if we want to get our communication and prioritization of our relationships back. It's a meaningful relationship component, which is the pillar of our life and pillar of mental health. So both from preventive, early intervention, long-term support, that's the key component. And I think that's also who we've been as a society. We've been an interdependent society, always integrated in each other's lives and supporting each other. It's just that 2 or 3 decades of so many changes, so much opening up, somewhere we lost connect to who we are. So when people tell me, how do we live in the new normal? I say, you get your normal back. Our normal was fine in your and my school days. You know, you had cousins and neighbors and friends and family support. You never felt that you were in it by yourself.
Correct.
That was us. So you bring that us back. You don't need a new normal. Get the old normal back.
Fascinating. What a nice way to put it. So, Dr. Parikh, now let's move to the next segment of our conversation, which is the Fortis National Mental Health Program. Tell me a little bit about this program and how you are impacting thousands of students.
So I'm now into practice for over two decades. Mm-hmm. 2000 is when I started. I was in an earlier organization, moved into Fortis in 2012, May. And Fortis Healthcare has presence across India. So we have hospitals in down south, Bangalore and Chennai. We have a presence in east, mm-hmm. Which is Kolkata. Strong presence in Punjab, mm-hmm. Amritsar, Ludhiana, Mohali, mm-hmm. NCR, as you are aware.
Yeah.
Hospitals, FMRI, Gurgaon being one of our key hospitals. And then, so we have been spread across. So what we did was we brought in the idea of bringing a comprehensive integrated mental health program across the network. So now we have, and now we also have standalone psychiatry hospital, Sukoon, which is one of our initiatives, very close to Fortis Gurgaon. And yes, while I was mentioning a network, Mumbai, where we again have four hospitals. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is that we have psychiatrists, clinical psychologists, counseling psychologists. We have a strong sports psychology program. Mm. We work with corporates on organizational psychology and their supports required and mental health solutions for them. Mm-hmm. We have work in remediation, which is special ed and OT. Mm. And we are looking at doing a lot more extensive work in remediation. Mm-hmm. And then our standalone psychiatry, which is first of its kind. Mm. And we intend to have more such hospitals, which is for acute care and de-addiction. In Bangalore, we've recently started a de-addiction program in-house. So what we've done is we've integrated mental health in tertiary, primary, secondary care. Okay. So in primary care, it'll be whether it's your preventive health checkups and with basic ailments, let's say you have diabetes, you need psychological work, so you get support. Secondary and tertiary as well. We have a very strong psycho-oncology program. So if you go across the network and if you are seeing, if you have a cancer-related problem, you would be seen by a psychologist, gone through a major surgery, let's say a cardiac surgery, you'll be given a consultation by a psychologist. So what we've done is we've integrated it in healthcare. But I think the key aspect of the Fortis National Mental Health Program is what we've done in the community, mental health and awareness. We work with over 10,000 schools in the country. Fortis School Mental Health Program has no cost to it. We've written a mental health curriculum. We train teachers on a mental health curriculum. It's all across India, in fact, UAE as well. We have a 24/7 helpline in 14 Indian languages running by our clinicians. And during COVID, there were times we were taking almost 400 odd calls a day. So support, we have a special helpline for caregivers of for patients with cancer, for their emotional support and well-being. For schools, we have lots of work that we do, life skills, parent training, teacher training. We've written a few parenting books, a few manuals for teachers. One of our key aspects, we in fact run a huge quiz called Psyched, which last year saw 15,000 students across India, 300 cities taking part, a few hundred schools. So that's the work that we do in schools. Then we work with a few NGOs to support them, working, for example, closely with Bachpan Bachao Andolan, Kailash Vidyarthi Foundation, Project Kaka, giving them support in the work that they are doing, working with the corporate sector as well for mental health outcome support, now for telemedicine as well. And like I mentioned, we have we're committed into bringing the advances of psychology in sports and helping our athletes. So these are some of the things that we do. The key aspect is that we are all about 100 odd experts put together, working in one standardized, process-driven, evidence-based program spread across the Fortis Healthcare Network.
What an incredible amount of work you are doing for so many students. Dr. Parikh, on that note, we've now run out of time. So I really want to say thank you so much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me about so many of the mental health challenges. And thank you for the incredible incredibly easy explanations you have given so that our viewers and listeners can understand the challenges that we could all face and how the first port of call is really your general practitioner. Thank you very, very much again, and good luck to you.
Thank you. All the best.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.